Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Jawanza for Life. I hope everybody had a wonderful day. I am so very excited to come before you again this afternoon to share some very, very positive information that I'm sure that you will be able to benefit from. I have another awesome show lined up for you today. My special guest today is Hekshemsu Heru Meyab Neter. He is a priest with the Osereset Society. He's a teacher, he's a counselor, and he's agreed to be my special guest today. I've interviewed this brother several times before, and everybody, you are in for a definite treat. Again, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to tune in. Brother Shekhar Meyab Neter, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be my guest this afternoon. Welcome to Jawanza for Life.
Thank you, Brother Jawanza, and thank you for the invitation to be on.
Very, my pleasure, brother. And again, as I stated, I'm sure that the listeners are in for a treat this afternoon. We're going to be talking about an initiation system that the Osereset Society has in place, and it's called the Osirian Initiation. And, you know, there are so many tools and means by which people are using to evolve spiritually, to make their lives better, the lives of their loved ones, to find answers to the questions that we all may have here on earth, just trying to find our way through, make our way through to reach that state of divinity, you know, our divine self becoming Osir on earth. And one of the tools by which that can take place is helping to facilitate that growth is the Osirian Initiation. And that's what this show, of course, is going to be about, delving into that, what it is, giving an explanation of what it is. And I'd like to get into that because first I'd like to start with, for example, what is initiation? I mean, because before we can speak specifically of what is the Osirian Initiation, people might really not know what the technical term means. What is an initiation? We've heard anybody that's been on any spiritual path has heard that term along the way at some point. You know, they're being initiated into this or, you know, the mystery systems or, you know, they've heard the term initiation, initiates. What is initiation, brother?
Well, when we talk about initiation, we're making reference to a program whereby someone is going to undertake making changes within themselves, or they're going to cultivate certain behaviors or instill certain ideas or certain ways of functioning, but it's going to be in a very structured and organized way. And in the context of the Osir Initiation, we're talking about implanting those changes and modifying your behavior with specific guidance, direction, and outline as to how to go about that process.
Okay. What is there a difference between initiation and a rites of passage? You know, because sometimes people might confuse the two terms. I know that in African culture, in some African cultures, a rites of passage is, you know, passing from one stage to another. Would the word initiation be synonymous with a rites of passage? Is it a rites of passage of sorts?
You would look at it as a rites of passage as in the context of growing and developing. And when we talk about the Osir Initiation, we're talking about really passing from that perspective or that identification of being a human being or being one of a human nature and coming to the realization of your divine true nature, that is a divine being. So in that context, it would be a rite of passage. But it's very much, again, a structured and organized format that one is going to undertake on a daily basis. So it's not just limited within a time frame. It's a continuous process until one truly comes into the full awakening of the divine true nature.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the changing of the identification from that of being a human being to a divine being. And I think that for a lot of people that, you know, I'll put it this way. In the last few years, people have moved away from just labels like, you know, certain religious labels. And people started saying, you know, oh, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, You know what I mean? And although that sounded good, you know what I mean, I'm spiritual, it was still kind of vague, you know what I mean? It's not, you know, really labeling anything. It's just the kind of, I'm out there, I'm spiritual. And even when people use the word divine, for a lot of people, it may sound good. It's a very high ideal, you know, to say, you know, I'm divine. And, you know, I like it personally, and I think that it is a great, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a great goal. But if people actually knew that, in fact, that you are divine, you know, that you are not just your arms, your legs, you know, human being with the flaws and the shortcomings and limitations, shall I say, that come along with that, but that you were made in the image and likeness of God, that whole identification can change one's own perception of themselves and how they live their life. So when people actually undergo the Osirian initiation, and that transformation of that identification takes place, how do you see the, I mean, I'm sure that you have, you know, either taken people through the initiation or seen people go through the initiation, the corresponding results of having this new identification. What have you noticed or have seen in the modification of behavior?
Well, just to take a step back to make sure that we're clear that we're fully explaining what it is when we talk about being a divine being. As you referenced, the world itself is made for the purpose of the supreme being to have an environment through which to express and experience its divine nature. And in order to have any experience, you have to be present in the environment. So God has truly made man, and when we talk about man, we're not talking about male, but God has truly made man in his image and likeness to serve as a vehicle through which it is able to have full experience, full expression, full creativity in its divine nature. So in that process of growth and development, as man is born into the world, man has to go through a period of transcendence and transformation, through a period of development whereby it grows beyond those animal qualities in terms of just basic survival and moving based upon feeling and emotions, and go beyond those human qualities of just looking at life from an intellectual perspective and indulging and satisfying one's desires, to get to the point of being truly a divine being and attaining to that point where intuitively you're able to realize your nature as a divine being. And that nature is reflected in the reality that we are made in the image and likeness of God, and that image and likeness of God is being peaceful by nature. And when we talk about being at peace, we're not talking about just feeling good or having a life that's free from stress. We're talking about a reality in which man is attaining his highest purpose. Man is attaining a true enjoyment of life, independent of the experiences that one is having. And that reality of truly enjoying life is what we refer to as happiness. And when we talk about happiness, we're talking about this oscillation between peace and joy. And one is able to be at peace, meaning have a stable heart, have a stable energy, have a stable mind, no matter what the situation and circumstances that they find themselves in. And when you're in a situation where it's correct to enjoy a certain experience or indulge a certain behavior, that which is in harmony with the 11 laws, which you can reference, then one will enjoy that experience. And then in the absence of that opportunity or in the absence of that moment in terms of indulging that which one would like to have, when the cycle is over, when the period is up, when the person is no longer there, then you're at peace. So you're going to be at peace when you have not any particular thing that you're attached to in terms of an enjoyment. You're going to enjoy the experience when it's correct and it's in harmony with the law. And then you're going to enjoy the peace when you're not present in that situation. So you're always going to be at peace, and then in those moments when you're righteously indulging certain experiences, then you're going to have a sense of joy. And that's what happiness is really about. So it's not predicated upon having any specific thing or particular environment or specific person. And the Osirian initiation is to help us to grow into that realization.
Okay, now, so we know that in this walk that we call our life, our, you know, our current incarnation, that there are going to be challenges to help push us towards our divinity, to help spark that quest to become Osir, to, you know, spark that quest to search for the answers to the meaning of life, which will in turn push us down the road to, you know, our divinity. In that process, there are going to be certain experiences that we encounter, certain people that are going to bring about these experiences. And if I'm understanding you correctly, that with this, through this initiation process, it can help to aid us in furthering us along this spiritual path, so that when we do encounter these challenges, which it appears that we must, because they in turn spur us on to a higher, you know, a higher place spiritually, if we encounter these experiences with peace, we can grow from them. Otherwise, if we don't encounter them with peace and we, you know, just stay tuned to our animal, you know, mentality, then we're going to stay where we are. But if met with peace, then we can accrue spiritual and, you know, wisdom and spiritual power to ourselves. But now, in this particular initiation, does it further us from the standpoint that the more we grow, and is it going to be, for example, the more we grow, the more we need? Because it appears to me that the more we grow and we are aware of the, we might be aware that this particular instance or encounter is a challenge. We might be aware of the fact that it needs to be met with peace. But sometimes these pop quizzes, you know, life will send you an experience out of the blue that you're not prepared for, and before you know it, you know, you're reacting in a way that you might not wish to react in, and you know you shouldn't be reacting in that way, but because you're caught off guard by this experience, you know, and you haven't reached a level yet of being at a level where you can immediately intuit the right answer or the right response, then, you know, you might slip and end up wishing you had another response. This Osirian initiation, if one undertakes it and, you know, successfully completes it, will that aid in the process of being able to help to have the best proper response to these unexpected life challenges?
Yes, and that's the purpose of the initiation, to reference what you were talking about in terms of the adversities that we have in life. As you said, those adversities are there to help us to grow and develop spiritually. It's like doing exercise. If you don't have any resistance, you're not going to strengthen yourself. So as we go through life, we meet challenges, we meet resistances. But if we do not address them, if we run away from them, then we're never going to truly strengthen ourselves, and we're never going to cultivate that psychical power in order to be successful. So not only do we have to have a mindfulness that adversity is a necessity in life to help us realize our divinity, but we have to appreciate those opportunities that come to us. So we don't say that they're really difficulties or obstructions. We just see them as opportunities for us to go and develop. And in appreciating those opportunities, we realize that God has put those situations in our life. God has brought people into those situations in our life for the purpose of helping us to go and develop. And that's another reflection of God's love for us, meaning that God has not forgotten about us. So the next time you find yourself in a challenging situation, in terms of cursing the situation, we can say Dwanatea, which in the Kemetic tradition it refers to thank God for this opportunity to truly grow and develop, and thank God for the love that you have for me, that you have brought these people into my life to help me to grow and develop. And you made reference in terms of how one behaves in those situations, and that's where the 11 laws, which I referenced earlier, comes into play. Every situation we find ourselves in life, in order to be successful in it, we have to make sure that we're using our spiritual qualities to address it correctly. And those spiritual qualities are reflected in 11 basic laws which God has brought forth as part of the order of life itself. In the Kemetic tradition, this is captured in the principle of Ma'at, which deals with divine order and divine balance. And part of the Osirian initiation, the essence of the Osirian initiation, is that you're implanting these 11 laws into your mind to serve as the basis for you reasoning, meaning that as you go through life and you have these situations, these quote-unquote challenges and these difficulties, you have to be able to reason, not based upon your feelings, sensations, or emotions, the animal aspect of your being, not just based upon your intellect and your past experiences, but based upon divine laws that you can serve serve as means and measures to look to see if what you're doing in that situation is correct. These are basic laws that are captured in one or two sentences that we are able to memorize. And when we get into a situation, we can just reflect on that law and take note, is what I'm about to do, is the choice I'm about to make in harmony with the law, or is this in violation of the law? And we know this is easier said than done, and that's why during the Ascend Initiation, we go through that daily process of using meditation, of using this reasoning principle, of using essays. We're writing down how we function in situations. We're keeping a journal. And every night we're also doing a declaration. We're reviewing whether or not we have lived free of sin that day. And then along with that, this is not a process you go through by yourself, but you're going through it with others, so you have group discussions and interactions so people can see how others are doing in terms of their work, and you can share your experiences. And again, it's a guided meditation. So the basis of Ascend Initiation is to implant into your mind the 11 laws, and let those 11 laws be the basis of reasoning how you go about living your life and making your choices. And the other aspect of the initiation is that as you do that, then now what you're doing is you're establishing a divine self-image. You're establishing an image of being at peace and being joyful in any and all situations. If one is violated, if someone is at a point where their life is challenged or they may feel that they're harmed, we're not saying you're going to enjoy that you're about to be harmed or violated, but we're saying that you're going to realize that if this is a situation, the best option I have always is to be at peace, because that allows me to be better able to tap into my divine knowledge and my divine power to address the situation. And even if harm does come to me, then it's still a benefit to be at peace, because if I'm going to go into a situation of fear or anger, I've had an experience that's already taken place and I'm worried about it and I'm grieving, I can't change the experience. But I can always change how I address the experience in terms of my thought processes and the feelings that I have. So that's why I said that it's always an oscillation from peace to joy. And we want to establish that divine self-image.
Okay. You mentioned something, and, one of the things that for man and woman is that when we are challenges, if the challenges tend to be brought about by the actions of someone else, then of course everybody is seeking, justice in the world. Everybody, is like, okay, well, if I have to experience this under this challenge, and if I have to remain peaceful in the midst of this challenge, and it's not just some happenstance situation where I experienced an accident, but let's say it's an intentional act on behalf of somebody else to cause you harm. Now, again, I'm aware that the law of Osir would say nothing and no one in the world can be against you, okay? But for, let's say, the person who's not aware of that law and is wondering, well, where's the justice? Actually, somebody mentioned that to me the other day. They were talking about an experience and was wondering, okay, I have to remain peaceful in this, but where's the justice for the wrongdoer? Could you speak briefly on that?
Well, let's be clear. Also, when we say about being at peace in a situation, we're not saying that one does not defend oneself and one does not take measures to protect oneself. But when we look at it from the bigger picture, if you're in a situation that has a sense of being violated, you do the best you can to address that situation. But if the violation occurs, as we are all here as an aspect of God, and it's all a growth and development process we must go through. Some of us are growing at a faster rate than others. We know that there's incarnations that occur where we have the opportunity to come back and continue to grow and develop. But as God, having made us in his image and likeness, then it is our nature, and life is structured such that life is conspired to always move us toward the realization of our divinity. So the justice that we may seek in a situation, it is not for us to judge the reason as to why one is functioning as they have functioned or as they are functioning. But as a divine being, we realize that we address the situation with the laws, we work to protect ourselves and do what we have to do to sustain ourselves. But then that's where the grandmothers and grandfathers of the old school would say, and also you need to pray for that individual. You pray that justice come upon them, that they come to grow and see the light, but it's not for us to dictate exactly how that's going to occur, because this is all part of a divine cycle that we're flowing through.
Okay. Awesome. By the way, to the callers who are listening on board, if you have a question or a comment and you'd like to join in the conversation, if you press 1 on your telephone, that will alert me that you would like to join the conversation, and then I can bring you on board. My special guest is Second Mayor Mater, Hek Temsuhuru, Mayor Mater. And again, I thank you for being my special guest. We're talking about the Osirian initiation, and again, press 1 if you'd like to join the conversation. Now, speaking of the Osirian initiation, what is there a process that a person has to go to prepare to enter into the initiation, you know, before someone is allowed to enter the initiation? Do they have to display a particular type of behavior, or is there any way of acknowledging whether an individual is ready, or if they just come forth and say, I'm ready to be initiated?
Well, the pattern in terms of spiritual growth and development is not one where so much a measure in terms of one's readiness, whereby you would give them a test or you just evaluate them based upon what's been told to you about the person. One would have to have a commitment within their own spirit, within their own being, that they're willing to make a change in terms of their behavior. They're willing to make a change in terms of their mindset. They're willing to live a more moral and righteous life. And as I referenced, a part of the initiation is that on a daily basis, you're reviewing how you have lived in harmony with the law each and every day. And if one is willing to make those changes and one is willing to continue to go through that process on a daily basis and sincerely, even though one may have violated the law that day, but is sincerely committed to do better and make that correction the next day, then this would be someone who would be ready for the initiation. They have to have an awareness of what Osir, the reality of Osir, is in life. They'd have to have a willingness to work to awaken that God within and a willingness to make the changes and the transformation that are needed in order for that to occur.
You know, sometimes when it comes to changes in going from the human self-image to the divine self-image, and not just making that that conscious evaluation of there is a human now that you're aware of it, okay, I'm not a human, I'm a divine being, just the whole process of making that actual transformation, because you're talking about transforming your whole thought process, your whole way of identifying, you know, and even in that, as you identifying that you yourself are not a human but a divine being, in that awareness, I'm sure, comes the awareness that everybody else is divine too. You know what I mean? But whether they have realized that or not, or whether they have, you know, made that conscious acknowledgement within themselves, they in fact were made in the image and likeness of God as well. So if you could just talk about that whole transformation, because it appears that it could be a very heavy, when I say heavy, I don't mean in terms of a bad way, but just in terms of just that whole shift, because you could spend, you might not come to this information until you could be in your 40s or 50s or 30s or whatever. You could have lived quite a long time identifying with the human before it even comes to your awareness that you are in fact divine, but now having made that acknowledgement mentally, you have still have now, you could have 30 or 40 years of living to undo in your mind, you know what I'm saying, living a particular way to now shift that into having this divine image. And I can see how important the 11 laws are to be able to give you that framework, you know, by which now to base your divinity.
Yes, the principles of the 11 laws in terms of correct living, and one can intellectually understand of the need to change, but that's inadequate in terms of truly making the change. The mechanism, a primary mechanism that's at the foundation of the means of being successful with the initiation is through the process of meditation. And when we're talking about meditation, we're talking about making one's spirit most receptive to those laws, to those principles that are implanted into the mind that are now giving you the correct blueprint for living. And when we look at our being itself, we're talking about two aspects of our being, two aspects that constitute who we are. You have your consciousness and your will, and that's an immaterial reality, meaning your presence in life is such that you are always able to dictate and declare how it is that you're going to live in any every given situation. And that's independent of the circumstances or the feeling, the sensation, the resources that you may have. That's reflecting your consciousness, your will. Since it's an immaterial reality, that which is able to see, that which is able to perceive and then dictate and make decisions as to how you're going to function and how you're going to manage a particular situation, that's beyond the energetics of the situation itself. But the means through which now you execute that choice, you execute your will, that's what takes place through the spirit. And the spirit is an energetic reality that's manifesting on various levels. And it's those different levels of the spirit in which we have the 11 laws reflected. So what I'm saying here is, in order to truly make a change, you can intellectually know that you need to change. You're awake, you're alert to that reality, you can see you need to change. But the automatic response is one that must be rooted into the spirit, and it's through meditation. When we talk about meditation, we're talking about medi as being in that middle state. So you're in that state whereby you're awake enough to see you need to change, but when you're asleep, you're most receptive. So we're talking about being in that middle state between being awake, where you can see what needs to be done and you're dictating that this is how you're going to live, but you're yet asleep or relaxed enough that you're able to receive that information and have that rooted into your spirit, so that now when you come into that situation or the scenario that you've identified where you know there's incorrect behavior or incorrect thoughts, now is it that you start to have this automatic response whereby you're no longer violating the law, but you're living in such a way that you're living in harmony with the law. You've made a choice, and you're giving the proper thoughts, you're giving the proper words, the proper actions that reflect living in harmony with the law. And that's the point where now we say that you look like God, that you're living in harmony with a divine self-image. So it's through meditation that transformation takes place. It's through meditation that one goes into that trance or that highly receptive state, and in that trance state you're able to transform.
Wow. You know, as I'm listening to you and as I've been reading Shechem Meshechem, Ra'u Nefer Amen's materials, I see that it just reinforces to me that becoming a divine being, or having that, making that realization and walking as God on earth, is not just something that just happens, you know.
Not at all.
Heard the word spiritual work. There's spiritual work involved. I mean, as I look at his material, I mean, he's got works on Qigong, he's got works on Bazi astrology, he's got works on meditation, different types of meditation, you know. And I think that when people come to this information and realize that, okay, you know, I want to be divine, I want to be a divine being, I want to realize my divinity, there's a lot of unlearning that has to be done. There's a lot of new learning that has to be done. There's a lot of commitment that has to be made toward making this realization. And there is that phrase, those two words, spiritual and work, put together, spiritual work, that is involved in it. And people have to know that becoming a God man or a God woman on earth is worth that effort, is worth the work that needs to be done to unlearn and relearn and to go into meditation and to change, you know, certain patterns of behaviors that weren't serving them, that had them actually come to the laws in the first place. If you could just talk about the commitment necessary to do it, and even if a person can be committed without, for example, certain things happening. Example, you know, I'm reading the book now, Wa'ev, the meditation, the comedic meditation, healing the brain through comedic meditation, and talking about the different lobes of the brain, you know, the different, the four brains, and you have the animal brains, you have the reptilian brain and mammalian brain, and if the third brain, or the, let's say, the prefrontal lobe is not awakened, then it appears that there's certain behaviors that men and women are bound to be subject to because the other parts of the brain have not been activated. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that's a very critical part in terms of our spiritual work. That's really what we're doing when we're going to develop spiritually. We live in a society in terms of Western culture whereby there's not a full understanding of the various aspects of the brains and the higher brains of man, which are really the determinants of man's behavior. So on a daily basis, when we're going into trance with the images of indulging our feeling sensations and emotions, drinking, getting high, putting things into our system that have a negative effect upon us, having our standard for happiness and success being predicated upon just me satisfying my urges and my desires independent of the impact and effect that it has on others, not really generating any moral righteous behavior. When we live like that, then we're constantly reinforcing and even exalting the lower aspects of our brain, the animal brain, and even the human brain, where you talk about cultivating your intellect. I mean, the greatest scholars or the greatest PhDs, we're talking about highly educated people that over the years are very much still warring with each other and killing each other and developing products that's having a detrimental effect upon themselves, their fellow man, and the world itself. So the highest aspect of knowledge and the highest aspect of life and true success is not predicated upon just having good information, but it's predicated upon knowing the presence of God in life. And that's what takes place through the cultivation of the higher brain in one's being. That when we talk about those prefrontal lobes, literally that mm-hmm. sense of intuition and that sense of morality and knowing what's correct and living based upon that energy is what we're moving toward, what the goal is of the Osirian initiation, to have those qualities reflected in your spirit automatically and therefore, again, living in harmony with those laws and now reflecting a divine self-image. That's true success in life. That's why you have situations you know where people will accrue great monies and great material wealth and still they're having major problems, committing suicide, family breakups. So those material gains and that personal satisfaction and indulging the urges and satisfying them is not the standard whereby we have to measure our success and growth. There has to be the divine law.
So if we could talk about destiny for a moment, because if we're in this world, okay, and there are a lot of different, there are people all over this planet that have come in there at various stages of development, some with their prefrontal lobe open, you know, some with it, you know, or awakened, some with them not, some people who have transcended the, you know, the mammalian and the reptilian brain, others who have not, you know, and these people are interacting, you know, with each other daily. You know, you might even have couples that get married. You know what I mean? A man might marry a woman and her, you know, her frontal lobe might not be awakened or vice versa, you know. And then you have problems. You got children, you know, who are born through these marriages and they're coming in at their own level of development, you know. And where does destiny play in this? Because if you have, for example, a situation where you have a world with all of these people and all of these people on different levels encountering one another. I mean, people who are spiritual, who may have risen to their divinity, encountering people who are not, you know, and vice versa, you know, and the people who are dealing from their reptilian and mammalian brain causing serious problems for those who, you know, have risen above that and are trying to live a spiritual life. Is it the destiny of the person who has to encounter the people, not saying that they're better in any way, you know, just different levels of development, but the destiny to have to deal with somebody who is causing problems in the world? You know, is it just the destiny of the people who have been enlightened or awakened to respond to those people in a way that will raise them up to a level of divinity?
Yes, it is. And even when you look at it from a more basic perspective in terms of if you're married and you have a mate, you have children, and everybody has to grow and develop within the family, and is it not part of your destiny to assist your children no matter what they're doing in their growth and development? You get married for the purpose of really making a commitment to assist someone else in their spiritual growth and development. So you take that same principle and you expand it on a larger level, and that's what we have in terms of the world. The more you come into the knowledge and the power of your divine nature, then the more adequately you are prepared and able to assist others in their growth and development. So one would not steer away from those challenges and, again, the quote-unquote adversities, but one would embrace that as this opportunity to really do God's work on earth and assist one to continue to realize the divinity and bring forth the presence of God in the world.
Wow. Again, my special guest today is, I'm going to say Shekinah Abner until I can get it right. My
no
brother
problem.
Is awesome, brother. So much for breaking it down the way you are. Again, to the callers online, if you have a question, please press 1, and we can bring you into the conversation. We are talking about a lot of different things, but we're talking about the Osirian initiation specifically. How long is the initiation, my brother? When you talk about the Osirian initiation, is it a set program that, you know, is it like a year, or is it broken down in time like that, or just until the initiate completes whatever the curriculum is and they can successfully say that, you know, they've done it?
The initiation is based upon the solar cycle. So the time period itself, it goes from February the 21st is the starting period of the initiation, and it goes all the way through to the winter solstice, which would be to December the 21st and the 24th. So until that time, each month you're going through another phase of the initiation. And within the Osirian tradition or the Kemetic tradition, there's 4 primary periods within that solar cycle, that solar year. And as we're about to become, as we're about to come to the beginning of the initiation right now, we're at a time in terms of the energy within the environment that we're still very much receptive to being impressed. As we talked about being in the receptive state, like with meditation, well, this is a time of the year during this cold time of the year where that fiery energy, that externalizing energy is at its wane. It's not at its highest point. So this is a time when we're more receptive to be able to impress with the ideas, with the proper images, with the proper laws, that we can allow those to take root into our spirit so that as we now come to the spring equinox and we're making that crossover, that Passover, from that period of the predominance of the cold internalizing energy, and now we're starting to have the dominance of the hot externalizing energy, then we're at a period where we want to have already sown those seeds and continue to nurture them so that they're starting to grow and sprout just as we have in the spring. And then we move to the summer solstice where that externalizing energy is at its highest and most established. So the behaviors and the patterns of functioning that we have set into our spirit are going to be at the highest degree of manifestation. So we really want to look at things and observe during the summer solstice, during the summer months. We want to observe to get insight as to where we are in terms of the correct mode of functioning. And since we totally are past that cool receptive state when we get into the summertime and at the summer solstice, as it was as we came through the winter into the spring, one was more receptive and could use your meditations and can use your nurturing to help to manage your behavior. When you get to the summer, you're going to have to now use your will more so to dictate how it is and to catch yourself and be mindful of your actions and to check yourself. And then when we go into the fall equinox, it just says, we say the fall, the energy has fallen in terms of that external expression. We're at the point now where you basically have to take stock and review how it is that you function throughout the time of your initiation, because you really have passed the period of establishing any new behaviors. You'd have to look at how you've conducted yourself and basically start to plan now as to what it is that you're going to need to be doing for the next year. But that really takes its full expression when we get to the winter solstice itself at that December 21st to 24th period, where this is what we refer to as the judgment, the highest judgment or the final judgment within those 4 aspects of the cycle, where this is the time of year where your spirit is most receptive to being, to receiving proper seeds, to receiving the proper knowledge, and also to review how it is that you have functioned throughout the year. This is the time where you're truly able to hear from your conscience, the God within, and review and see how it is that you have lived for that solar year and that Osirian initiation period that you've come through. And this now would be the time that you realize that as I come forth again to the next year and go to the next Osirian initiation, these are the behaviors that I was successful with changing and establishing this righteous way of living, and these are certain behaviors that I did not fare so well and I must continue to work with as I move forward into the next year. So it's based upon that solar cycle, and it's a monthly activity.
Okay, so when the initiate is going through these different exercises, for lack of a better term, and, you know, self-evaluation, you know, hitting some, missing some, you know, does the does God take into consideration the effort, you know, because let's say, for example, if one is, you know, they're really good on one of the laws, you know, they're so-so on another of the laws, they're kind of hitting and missing, and they might just be not working with one of the laws, they might be missing altogether, but they are truly, truly trying. I mean, they're really putting forth the effort to try to live up to the 11 laws and to try to, you know, do whatever it is that they can to live righteously and to be a God man or a God woman, but in not having reached a particular level of their evolution, they're not where they're going to be, but they're trying. I mean, because I was under the impression if you miss one law, you know, the 11, and you, in order to be successful, you have to implant all 11 in your mind. And, of course, that's the hope, but there's a process, I'm sure, to going from A to Z. So just in that context of growing, you know, is that taken into consideration when, for example, you're encountering a situation and, you know, when your natural response is to pray for aid, you know, the response will not be, well, I would help you out, but, you know, you missed the seventh sphere, you know what I mean? So, I mean, when it comes to that, how does that work? I mean, in terms of the effort being put forth, I mean, I'm sure that God is very understanding, you know, where you are in your development and will, you know, assist you to get to where you're going. But in the process, you know, you're not going to be left out there to dry because you didn't keep all of the 11 laws. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, the Osirian initiation is an annual process. So it's not like you have one opportunity to do the initiation. If you don't get it that one time, then that's it. You know, we'll just forget about you because there'll be no change in development. No, it's an annual process that you go through. It's a growth process. Just again, as a child has to grow and develop, as we do our spiritual work, we have to grow and develop. And God realizes this. God, one of the laws, the law of Moses states that God needs us to come into the world, and fulfilling God's need is the highest act of love. So in that sense, when we are making a commitment to grow and develop spiritually, and we're making a commitment to live in accordance with those 11 laws, what we're basically doing is we're entering into a covenant with God, meaning that we're saying that we will work to abide by the laws, realizing that as we abide by the laws, we truly come into an understanding of the knowledge and the words of God, then that will unfold and open to us the divine power of God. And as we tap into that divine knowledge and that divine power, we're coming forth as divine beings, and that's helping God fulfill its need to have us reflect its divine self-image, because that's the only way God can truly experience the world, is as a divine being. So we're making a commitment. We're entering a covenant with God that we will live by the laws, we will work to abide by the laws, do the work to awaken those laws. And as we do that, we're also saying that we're acknowledging that God is the only one who can truly judge us, and that takes place on a nightly basis where we have, as I referenced, the declarations of freedom from sin or the weighing of our words and the weighing of our will. And what we're saying is we review each day, and it is our conscience, it is the conscience, the conscience is the reflection of God within our spirit, the supreme being within our spirit. So when we have that quote unquote, that little voice that's telling us, now, you know, you shouldn't do that, or that's incorrect, and we say we didn't listen to the voice, or we didn't follow our conscience, that's the God within us that's talking to us. So as we do our nightly meditations, and then we complete those by reviewing and saying that the way the process goes is you say that you tend to get angry in a certain situation, or you tend to worry about certain things. So at night you would say, I have not been angry, or I did not experience anger. I have not experienced anger at my job. You'll say, I have not, or I have not worried about my financial matters. Because the worrying, the anger, the grief, the fear, these are all emotional expressions that are directly associated with, quote-unquote, being a human being, but it's known that they're going to have negative impacts upon our spirit and upon our health in terms of the mental, emotional, physical aspect. It lowers your IQ. It takes away from your ability to reason properly. It's sending forth chemicals that's putting your blood into a higher pressure mode. So those emotions that are associated with being human are really against our spiritual development. So those are critical and pivotal in terms of using as a reference to determine if we're living in harmony with the law. And we're speaking as we say this out loud, I have not have I, or I have not lived in violation. We're talking to our conscience, and our conscience is hearing us, and it's weighing our words, and it's weighing the choices that we made. So that's the relationship that God has with us as we go through that process of growth and development. And the sincerity is important, so that if I slipped and I did get angry, I would not say the proper thing to say was, I did get angry, I realize that is incorrect, and I will no longer do that. So you're declaring in your will that you're acknowledging your failure, but that you will do better next time. So when you say you have not, then you're embracing that reality. You're saying that's a part of how you live. And when you say you did, you're putting it into the past, realizing that now you're willing to make a change. So it's that covenant with God through the conscience of God within us, weighing our words and weighing our heart, that sincerity is helping us to carry into the next day, into the next month, into the next year, and that God will always continue to work with us.
Would you say then that someone even coming to these laws and trying to work on them, I mean, actually going into the initiation, doing the nightly meditations, the YF meditation, and then the MNAV meditation, and, you know, going through the different tools that are offered by the CSS Society to just awaken and evolve, is that an indication? Would you say that is an indication that the animal in them, that the mammalian brain and the reptilian brain, that they've actually overcome that, or at least a portion of it, just by the simple fact that they are in fact seeking something higher? Is that an acknowledgement that the prefrontal lobe is either awakened or starting to become awake?
Well, that's an acknowledgement that you are transcending the lower aspects of your being, but as with any situation where you're working to cultivate skills or techniques, or you're getting to a point where you want to say that you have been successful or you're certified that you did what needs to be done, life has to test us. So we can make the verbiage, we can intellectually state the intent. We have to go through the process, and that's why it's so critical to do those declarations of freedom from sin on a nightly basis, because that really shows the success that we're making in our work. So it is indicating that one has the knowledge of the need to change, going through the process of the work and truly working to make those changes, the foundation that lets us know whether or not we're being successful.
Okay. Well,
and realizing, realizing in that process that as you continue to do the work, you have to have certain incorrect behaviors and certain thoughts and certain images you know you need to change, and you're doing your meditation script based upon that, meaning you're looking at your behavior. Let's say, again, you get angry, so you're going to write a meditation script whereby you're going to write the scenario. You come into work, you see them, you have tension, you start to constrict, you ball your fist, you're sighing, because it's your interpretation that, you know, they make you mad, they make you upset, or they're going to say something to you, they're going to talk bad about you, whatever the situation may be. But then along with that scenario you're writing, you're following that by the truism or the law that you're indicating, whereby you're saying, well, as is the case in the law of Osir, nothing and no one is against me, and all these experiences that I come to are the opportunity to help me to grow and develop, to tap into my divine knowledge and my divine power. So without that quote-unquote adversity, again, we won't grow. So I'm acknowledging that law, and I'm realizing that this person, you asked about destiny earlier, this person is a part of my life experiences, because they've been put there is part of that process of growth and development I have to go through, whereby I'm being challenged to do this correct. So I'm acknowledging that as the law that I have to work with, that law will say. And then I'm having a visualization. I'm having, as I do my meditation, I'm imagining myself being very cordial and being calm and relaxed and dealing with the person and smiling when I'm dealing with them, because that's showing that my spirit is in a state of relaxation. That's showing that the life force can flow freely and unobstructed, and I become vitalized and awakened in that situation and able to make the right choices and function correctly. And the fourth aspect of this meditation script is seeing yourself receiving a blessing, because if I'm living in harmony with the law, I'm balancing my life force, I'm making the right choices, I'm not violating, then that's going to afford to me the opportunity to receive divine blessings. So I would want to see myself receiving a blessing based upon my living in harmony with the law. That's how the process is.
Brother, if you could talk about, briefly the life force. Someone asked me about that just the other day. It's like, gosh, Lee, I wish a lady was asking me. She said, you know, I'm not really quite understanding the life force. When you talk to your guests, can you ask them about the life force? Could you just briefly break down what is the life force for those who might have heard the term, seen it in literature, but don't quite really understand it and its function?
Well, the life force is the energy behind that, the energy that supports all the actions that we manifest. All our physiological functions and the actions and all our expressions, there's subtle energy behind that that allows that to occur. Another way to look at it is while we're living, you have this subtle energy flowing through your body that allows you to be active and animated. When a person dies, you still have the dense physical body, but that animating life force, that energizing, that electromagnetic energy that flows through them is no longer attached to the physical being. So the life force is that which directly impacts upon one's physical expressions and one's physical behavior. And we say that the life force always has to be in a vital and balanced state. But that which really influences the life force is the thoughts and images that you have in your mind. There's a chart that we reference called the hierarchical parts of man's being. And it starts at the top. You have consciousness, again, the essence of your being, who you truly are, that aspect of you that sees everything that occurs. And based upon that sight, you then now can make choices, and that's where your will comes in. So you will, that you will respond in this way, that you make this choice, you will follow this pattern. But that has to filter through your mind before it impacts upon your life force to come to a particular physical expression. So you have the consciousness via the will impacting upon the mind, and that's why the Osirian initiation is critical, because with the Osirian initiation, we're implanting into our mind those 11 laws, which now then serve as the filters, whereby when we look at a situation, we make the choices based upon, is what I'm about to do in harmony with the law or violation of the law. And when those laws are properly planted into our mind and they serve as our basis for reasoning, then we're assuring ourselves success, health, and wealth, because what we're doing now is we're going to vitalize, energize ourselves, and bring balance into our life force. And so critical in what influences our life force is imagery. And that's why we say we have to supplant the human self-image with a divine self-image. So when we put those laws into our mind, and the mind is directly influencing the life force, and this is proven time and time again, that there's a step between just willing and saying you're going to do something and having it to happen. Because if all we have to do is just say we will do something, it's going to automatically occur. We wouldn't even be having this conversation now. We just started by saying, so we all will to be the divine beings that we are, and that's it. Thank you for the interview. But there's things that take place in your mind that tend to undermine what it is that you say you will to do, or tend to negate what it is that you say you will to do, or obstruct what you say you will to do. And that's why from your will to your life force, you have to go through your mind. And that's why the Osirian initiation, you're putting the 11 laws into the mind. When you do that, then now you have the laws that are now going to influence your life force. When the 11 laws, which are the laws of God, the divine laws, when those laws are in order, then you're going to have a vital and balanced life force. That means now that your emotional expressions will always be in harmony with being at peace and joy, and you won't have any tension, you won't have any stress, you won't have any worry, you won't have any fear. You will be able to that you still have the same challenges in life, but you're now going to meet them with a sense of peace and joy. And everybody's had situations in life where however many days ago, weeks ago, or years ago, they may have had to deal with somebody, deal with a situation they couldn't handle, they was running away from it, it was just too much, it was overwhelming, but then they got over it, right? If you can do it one time and you realize the principle is there to do it, you can do it all the time. Sometimes it's a hit-and-miss situation when you're just doing it based upon your own intellectual information, but when you have the 11 laws as your foundation for, again, reasoning, then you're going to ensure yourself that health and that success in any and all situations. So the life force is that energy that influences all activity in life.
I wish we had more time. I want to, because this is so good, man, and I want to thank you again for the opportunity to share this information with my listeners. I got a couple of announcements that I definitely want to get out for all of the listeners. There's going to be a workshop in D.C. The Asar Set is offering a workshop on Bazi astrology. Brother Sanu Pera is going to be doing a lecture in Washington starting on February the 14th. That's a Friday, from February the 14th through 16th. And I'm going to ask my brother to give a telephone number where people can call to get more information. Again, that's going to be on Bazi astrology. Brother Sanu Pera will be doing a lecture workshop in Washington from February the 14th through the 16th. And actually, I will be interviewing him that Wednesday on February the 13th. Okay, so mark your calendar. You definitely want to tune in for that. That's going to be on Thursday, February the 13th, I will be interviewing Sanu Pera. He will be in D.C. starting on February the 14th through the 16th. I also want to encourage everybody to get the book, Waheb, Healing the Brain with Kemetic Meditation. Get the book. It is very powerful, very informative, and the techniques. I've started the techniques probably about a month ago now, and I'm starting to see progress already. Actually been seeing it for the last few weeks, so it works. So definitely get the book. Also, Menab is coming. Brother Shechem Shechem Ra'un Nefer Amen, coming out with another book on meditation. It's called Menab. If you want to be on the lookout for that, it's not out yet, but it's on the way. So definitely want to make sure that you get a copy of that when that comes out. Brother, can you please give the number for the people who might be in the D.C. area or living in D.C. now or Maryland and Virginia that might want to attend the Bazi workshop and they'd like more information or the address?
Okay, the address is 6224 3rd Street. That's number 3 Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20011. And the phone number they can call for further information is 240-461-5674, 240-461-5674. And I'd also like to announce that with the Osirian Initiation about to begin on February 21st, we have people literally all around the world doing initiation because you can do it through an online program. And that's via the Tawi Network. Ra'un Nefer Amen, who's the author of the Medunda Tev Volume 4, the Osirian Initiation, the Osirian Resurrection, Osirian Initiation book, has also a program whereby individuals can sign on via Tawi, which is the educational and business arm of the Osiris Society. Go to TawiNetwork.com, and they can register to get the online initiation program and go through the whole initiation and in their own home environment. You don't have to come out to do the class to do that. And that particular program provides you online presentations along with the guided meditation itself is online, and you can also have feedback by talking to other individuals who are doing initiation, and if need be, you can call certain counselors and get some guidance and direction in your work. So one would have to go to TawiNetwork.com in order to facilitate that.
And Tawi, that's T-A-U-I?
T-A-U-I Network, N-E-T-W-R-K.com. Yes, Tawi, thank you.
All right. Any closing remarks, my brother? Again, thank you so much. I wish we had more time. This has been an awesome interview. You've shared a lot of great information that I'm going to use. I'm going to go back and listen to the archives again, listen to the show again, and I want to encourage everybody. You can always go back and listen to the archives if you're catching it live and you want to share it with someone else. please go back and you can check it out on the archives again. Any closing remarks, my brother?
Well, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to be on tonight, especially me personally being on, and also like to invite everyone, if you're in the D.C. area, you can come over to our center, which is the SynBev Wellness Complex. SynBev means to have good health. That's also at 6224 3rd Street Northwest. And at that location, we have a vegetarian cafe and also a health food store and a clothing boutique. So we invite everyone, if you're there in D.C., please come and visit us, and we can share more information with you. You can access some of the books and educational materials and the meditation, guided meditation CDs.
Well, brother, again, I want to thank you so much for the work that you've done. I know that you've been doing this work for years under the guidance and the tutelage of Shechem Meshechem Ra'u Nefer Amen, helping to further the work of the Oseraset Society. Again, I want to say thank you to you. Thank you to all of the teachers over there in the D.C. Nome that I've sat under and listened to and learned from. And I every time I have the opportunity, I want to get you all on so that I can share this information with the rest of the world, because it's so valuable and it has the potential to be life-changing if it's used. Again, thank you for everybody who's taken an opportunity out of their day to listen. Thank you to the callers online who've listened in. Again, you can go back and listen to the archives and share the information with a friend. Again, brother, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your evening, and I will be in touch. And please give my regards to everyone at the D.C. Nome of the Oseraset Society.
All right, thank you, Brother Juwan. Well, peace.
All right, peace and blessings.
Okay.
Okay, hotel. Everybody, again.